Jamuna Mai ki, Ganga Mai ki, Tulasi Devi ki, Bhakti Devi ki, Samaveda Bhaktivinda ki. All glories to the Sami devotees. All glories to the Sami devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Guranga. On the Harinam Chintamani, which we'll be doing for the rest of this week. So today we are to look at chapter 3 and 4. Namabhas, or the unclarified name. Mahavishnubhuraya Kritam Staya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deva Gauravani Vacharine Devasasya Sunyavadi Prasikacha Dezatarine Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Sadvaita Graha Sivasati Go Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, just as we're discussing, just as Lord Chaitanya Krishna arranged to speak so many intimate things to using Ramananda Roya to explain ultimately about the highest activity of the living entity, and ultimately about the relationship of the jiva and the spiritual world in association, the divine couple. Just as Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was able to speak about liberation, as Lord Chaitanya used him to explain such things. And just as Rupa Goswami was very much influenced to share so many wonderful things about Rastadva as Lord Chaitanya spoke through him. So in that same spirit of being used and being an unalloyed servant representative of Krishna, that Haridas Thakur is being used as he is sharing his message of the Harinam Chintamani and the message of the potency, efficacy of the holy name. So it's so exciting in the sense that often one wants to know something, and many times you get indirect connections that may or may not be valid, may or may not be so exact or profound. But here we're hearing directly from the Nitya Siddha. Here we are hearing directly from Krishna himself speaking through such a great surrendered servant. So it has its ability to clear up the ambiguity. There can be so much ambiguity and obfuscation when there's uncertainty about what is to be done, why it is to be done, uncertainty about how it is to be carried out. So it's like you're trying to go to, you know, to New York, but you haven't been there and you don't have clear instructions or clear directions. But someone who goes there or who has come from there, they can tell you very clearly, you do like this, you do like that, because they know the environment. So these great personalities, they can give us so much clarity because they are highly empowered to be able to give that sort of facilitation to help connect the living entities with our eternal home. And they're expert in dealing with the kind of diseases that we have as we are captured, you know, by the three modes of material nature. So we can take great shelter of such instructions. So here we can take great shelter as Haridas is further elucidating about the holy name. So, again, he is totally overwhelmed as Mahaprabhu is asking him to do this. And previously with voice trembling and body shivering, and tears coming from his eyes as he embraces in a very captivating way Lord Chaitanya's feet, feeling very humbled to be able to share and speak something, but at the same time feeling very, very fortunate to have the Lord's association and to render some service in such a way. So such powerful love between Mahaprabhu and his devotee with him, etc. The reciprocity is just awesome. So now, Haridasi begins to speak, and he explains the holy name, its potency, similar to the sun. And he gives the idea of how the sun is very powerful, but there are times when the cloud is covering the sun, and so one is not able to get the full benefit or the full effect of the sun. But it's there, and it's potent, but the covering is also there. So his reference to the covering explains it in different ways, that the jiva is allowing such covering. The holy name is very powerful, it's very pure. If we use our free will, then we temporarily connect with different things. And that the, especially the anarthas, influence cause us not to have the reciprocation that's accessible. So he calls, he says, like the cloud and a mist, how they spread a blanket over the jiva's vision and perception. So he's unable to see this sun-like holy name. And so ignorance and also anarthas, especially anarthas, they maintain the covering, and as there is knowledge and understanding, as we are to be freed from the anarthas, then the sun begins to manifest in its full radiance, its full potency. So the neophyte has a tendency to minimize such coverings and even does things that that amplifies them. And so in this discussion, he is talking a lot about namabhas and how to, the benefits of such, but its limitations. And so we look first at the anatomy of the cloud of anarthas. And he gives it in three categories here. First, hankering for things that are temporary and unreal. So this major layer of the cloud of that's covering is due to this longing and the desiring things that are temporary, that are relative, and that they're not really substantive, but we somehow feel that we need them. We want to have some experience, some association with such. So this is a major cloud. Next, he talks about weakness of the heart and of the mind. That one's constitution, one's will, is quite weak. We know that Krishna responds to our desires, but he responds to the aggregate of our desires. So when our will and our constitution is weak, we have distinctly some desires for purity, some desires for self-realization, some desires for unconditional service, but those desires are minute in contrast to our unhealthy desires that are much stronger. So as the unhealthy desires are stronger, then the resultant produces something inauspicious, because the Lord in the heart is monitoring what's really going on in our consciousness. And so if our desires for sense gratification, our desires for deviation are stronger than our desires for devotion, we will keep finding that things will happen in our life space and environment, as well as in our mind, that will be inauspicious. And people often wonder why. Sometimes devotees are trying to figure out, how is it that they are trying to be very determined, and they're praying, and they're following the principles somewhat, but the creeper is not somehow, blossoming very nicely. And sometimes they doubt the process. Sometimes they look all around them to find some reason to justify leaving the royal path of devotion, or some reason to justify being angry at Krishna, or considering that maybe this is just not potent. Well, the science is there and the potency is there, and it is so potent that the fact that one who is not proper has trouble shows that it is potent. It is so potent that the fact that somebody falls down shows that it is extremely potent, because someone falls down because they do not act in the proper way. And it's a way of clearly showing that Krishna is monitoring and Krishna is personally involved in making rectifications and allowing clarification. Every time when you see big fall, it's a sign that the process works. It's a sign that when there is discrepancy, when there's incoherence, when there's a minimization of the path of bhakti, when there's too much jnana mishra bhakti, yoga mishra bhakti, karma mishra bhakti, then it contaminates the devotional creeper. And it gets weaker or it gets drained, it dwindles, and sometimes it takes almost like a temporary death. And so if we took medicine or didn't take medicine, it didn't make any difference, then what is it? What is the potency? What is the question of the efficacy of the medicine? But if there is sickness, and if we don't take the medicine, and we find that our sickness goes on or increases, and when we take the medicine, we find that there is a difference, and it's a sign that there's something special about the medicine. If someone deviates externally, or if someone is a deviant and internally, on, and there is no difference from someone who is very loyal to the process, very dedicated, very selfless, very locked in to the Parampara system, very locked in to taking more shelter of Shastra, Sadhu and Guru. But if one was just totally independent and doing whatever they want, how they want, or constantly thinking only about their material concerns as priority, and the same level of consciousness is in both persons, then it means this process is mythology. It is just sentimental at best, and we should all do something different. But it does work. And it will grow according to how the creeper is protected and nourished. And it will dwindle when we start finding ourselves feeling, especially losing utsaha, losing enthusiasm, then we should immediately do as Haridas is going to be telling us, look to see where is the aparad. Where is the anartha? Or where are the anarthas of the aparad? Sometimes it's so much. And if we go looking, then we can be able to weed out. Otherwise, one should be constantly growing in maturity, constantly growing in appreciating with gratitude what our great acharyas have given us, and constantly, gradually beginning to become an experiencer of the theology. Where, as we are reading, it's no longer just reading or historically thinking about the culture of devotion in a historical way. Devotees cannot go from month to month, year to year, in these cases, decade to decade, and unless somehow there is some genuine taste developing, then one will start getting taste from sense gratification once again. You can't just keep repressing unless there is some unfoldment and some maturation developing. And so sometimes we are repressing because we don't have sufficient fixedness in following the science properly. And then we become overwhelmed with material desires because they weren't really eradicated. They were just pressed somewhat and they start coming out in all kinds of ways. And sometimes they start coming out in all kinds of ways. They come out so strong that we leave devotional service, or they come out not quite as strong and we stay in, but we stay in devotional service like in a sense of retirement. And therefore, we are making Krishna consciousness like a religion where we do not really inconvenience ourselves in trying to serve, because love means that you are ready to see constantly how to facilitate the beloved. And you enjoy making arrangements, agitating the mind. You enjoy doing things beyond your own personal comfort zone. But when we're not feeling so much taste, having so much faith, then we may go on, but we go on sort of mechanically. We go on very systematically in the sense of keeping a comfort zone. But we notice that there's no real idea of just having comfort is a major priority. Yes, we have to maintain body and soul together. We have to be practical. And that's an integral part of our preaching. But we are not an ordinary religion. Nor are we an ordinary process in Vedic culture. We are not just to even honor Varnashram Dharma. We are not just to see how to engage in being a loyal member of a powerful institution, we are to become an experiencer of the theology where our life become our message. That people become amazed at what Krishna consciousness is because of how they see the participants, how much they have changed, how much they are wholesome, how much our families are wholesome, that we are maintaining physical, psychological, emotional, and most important, spiritual caring for those who are in an immediate environment as we try to do that in our extended environment. Happens with our families first, then with our communities, and then we have a chance to influence the society. But if it's not happening first with ourselves and with our families, then what is the question of our communities being stronger? What is the question of us doing what these great acharyas have commissioned us to do to assist them in global transformation? And so Haridas, sneaking in, coming in from the spiritual world, and in a environment, in a body where he is like an outcast, he is in a Islamic connection, but he is being used for giving the Yuga Dharma, as he is the Namacharya. A powerful honor is being put upon him as a way of Mahaprabhu also showing that in this age, it has very little to do with varna and ashram. But it has to do with receptivity of consciousness. It has to do with the mercy of Lord Nityananda that will reach out, especially where there is the need, or we say the most fallen, will reach out and will touch into our consciousness if we allow. But the cloud, holy name is that brilliant sun that can have such an amazing radiation and effect on the entire environment, but it can be sometimes clouded. Some obfuscation can be there by the cloud. So the cloud of hankering for things that are temporary and unreal, two weaknesses of the heart and mind, that means our sinful desires, deviant desires are stronger or as strong as our spiritual desires. Three, offenses. Then he goes into explaining about Namabhas. But first, how it is the duty of the preceptors, it is the duty of the spiritual masters, he said, to inaugurate the devotees into sambandha, proper understanding of sambandha. If that is not first established clearly, who we are, what our relationship is, then it's like trying to build a house without a foundation. Then the reaching Abhideya and Vyojana becomes a joke. It's like you're going to build a gorgeous high tower building, and the ground floors, the initial beams and things, are not sufficiently strong. Then it's inherently going to be a disaster. And so emphasizes that this is very much important, that one is being trained up in the proper understanding of sambandha. In a very amazing way, Haridas tunes us into Namabhas. He explains that Namabhas is like when Gopal Chakravarti was upset when he heard that Haridas was saying that one could attain liberation just at the Namabhas state, at the clearing state. And so Haridas, of course, explains that performing all kind of yajnas, engaging in all types of austerities, visiting all kinds of pilgrimage places, that you put all that together, and it is not as powerful as the effects that can be received and how one can benefit from even chanting at the Namabhas state, not even the pure state. But he says one gets more benefit, more blessings. It's showing how powerful the connection is with the holy name, Golakera Premadana Harinama Sankirtan. Because really, this is our email message, this is our fax line, this is our satellite connection with the spiritual world and with Krishna. And even though sometimes you send a message and you may not get immediate reciprocation, but the party is accessible and the message goes there. So at the Namabhas state, even though full reception is not going on, but a connection has been made. And he's saying that it is so powerful, the benefit, that one should be extremely careful to chant the holy name properly to worship it, to honor it, and to be extremely careful in how we perceive those who are chanting the holy name, and not take it in any way as something light. Namabhasi gives four attitudes. The four attitudes in Namabhas chanting are, first, sankheta, or unintentional, and then parihasa, or in jest, ridiculing. The next one is somewhat similar, stoma, also like in laughter or in jest, and hela, with disregard or neglect. Now the first category, the unintentional, he breaks down into two categories of themselves. He says when one, though intending to chant the Lord's name, has material conception. So somebody's actually, you know, chanting the holy name, but their conception of what they're doing is improper. They're thinking that it's demigod's connection. They're thinking it's to affect karma only. They're thinking it is to make them rich. They're thinking it's to annihilate, you know, their enemies or something. But some blessing is there, but it is unintentional, some of the potency that they're associated with. Excuse me, they're not fully aware of it. And then another case he gives is this, and he gives example of the yavanas. The yavanas, they eat cows, yet in spite of this, they can attain liberation by uttering haram, an ordinary word in the language Urdu, where Lord Krishna's name is automatically chanted. The power of the holy name is never diminished, even in such chanting as the Sankheta Namabhas, or the unintentional. So he's saying here, there is benefit. You won't get pure love of God, but liberation is possible. Even if someone is chanting accidentally, they're not knowing fully about the potency or the value of the holy name. And he gives an example, which is kind of extreme but interesting, that someone just using the letters, the sound that brings Hare or Haram, that brings the Lord's name, that such will be beneficial for such person. Meaning that even though somebody may be accidentally chanting, that there is some unusual karmic arrangement that allows them to be experiencing what, you know, what seems to be an accident. It says, just as chanting in jest, like in the case of Jarasandha, that he got liberated. In laughter, and in criticizing, Sisupal was liberated. Even chanting inattentively and with disregard results in deliverance from the pangs of material existence. Namabhas chanting can purify anyone. People of low unbringing, like malechas, gross materialists, and lazy persons, can all avail this opportunity to obtain liberation. Now he talks about two categories of Namabhas, Shraddha Namabhas and Hela. Shraddha is, of course, with faith, and Hela is doing it with disgust, so to speak. That's the words he used, with disregard. Faithful chanting, this is afflicted by anarthas, is known as Shraddha Nam. As you yourself have explained, my Lord, the element of real Shraddha is absent in the four attitudes of Namabhas chanting. Meaning that where there is Namabhas, yes, there is chanting, some connection is there, but there is a lacking of proper, significant, deep, profound faith. And because of that, one is not able to experience the full benefits that are associated with diving more into the holy name. Anarthas, short of Krishna Prema, every other success is available in Namabhas. So he's saying everything is available, liberation, mystic powers, facilitation, wealth, so many things can come karmically from that, based, of course, on individual karma also. But where there will be a lacking is in attaining Krishna Prema. So it doesn't give us pseudonam, pure nam. But how amazing. And this is why we see when Gopal Chakravarti was angry and criticizing Haridas by thinking that he was some sentimental practitioner, when Haridas explained that just at Namabhas one can attain liberation. And Gopal Chakrabarty was thinking. But many yajnas, one going through all kinds of austerities for many lifetimes, and liberation is not even attainable sometimes. And this sentimental bhakta is saying that from Nama Bas that these things can be acquired. Well, here we have more validity, more points validating that this is what takes place. Haridas says, I bow down to that fortunate soul who has freed himself from committing Namaparad, offenses against the holy name. The Namabas stage is far beyond knowledge and fruitative work. And if one's Shraddha is furthermore rooted in Rati, or that's attraction, and is offenseless as well, then gradually it will lead to the pure name. In the last part of this chapter, he talks about the two kinds of Namabasas. First, he says there is Namabas, there is Vaishnavabas, there is Shraddhabas, Ratibas, Premabas, Muktiabas, Abasa. Abas means indistinct or faint. So it's saying, in other words, that these things are in the dawning state, they're faint, they're not quite fully, fully manifested, but it's there. He says there is Swarupa Abas and Pati Bimba Abas. These are two very special categories. Swarupa Abas is the partial infiltration of the full brilliance. For example, on a cloudy day, the light of the sun is present, but the full brilliance of the sun is shaded by the clouds. Now, so that means the one type of Abas is that the effulgence is there, but it's shaded. This is a matter of uncovering with the false ego, uncovering from ignorance, uncovering from aparats, various types of anarthas. Those are the coverings. Remove those for presence and benefit is there. But then the second category, he says it's a distortion, and it's actually more serious. And it can even cause one to come to a point where one does not even take shelter of the holy name at all. And he gives the example of like the sun reflecting off the water, and it has now some perversion effect of its rays. So he gives that as an analogy to Mayavadi input or influence. And so he warns us that where there is that Mayavadi conception or tendency, wanting to minimize that there is a Supreme Personality, wanting to minimize Papa Sambandha, that we are eternally having personality also, we have eternal relationships, we have eternal responsibilities or obligations and joys and services, and that is in one's consciousness, then he is mentioning that one will later go down. And one should also avoid such people who have this kind of consciousness, because they will be so so contaminating that it can even take one from even basic initial contact with the benefits of the holy name. So he calls this Pati Bimba. Chanting in Pati Bimba Namabas increases one's offenses. So according to the Mayavadis, Lord Krishna's name and form qualities and pastimes are illusory, false, temporary, and contaminated. So such persons do not really, of course, want to know Krishna. And although they're engaged in some connections with Vedic activities, that they are missing the ultimate goal, not understanding what is the ultimate siddhanta. And he's saying that such a mentality, even though chanting is very powerful, and Namabas can gradually lead one to prema, with proper association and proper understanding, that if there is the Namabas and there is this type of mentality, that instead of gradually going up, one will go down. Then last he says, diligently avoid the association of Mayavadis. Please serve those who are attached to chanting purely. O Lord Chaitanya, this is your injunction. Haridas still speaking. Whoever follows it is very fortunate. Those who disregard and disobey this instruction they will suffer eternally. O my Lord, please bless me so I can reject bad association and take shelter at your lotus feet. There is no other way. Then he ends this particular discourse by saying, Bhaktivinoda is writing, one who is blessed with love and affection and takes pleasure in serving Srila Haridas, the Kaur's lotus feet, will find this book, Harinam Chintamani, as valuable as life itself. Now, the last chapter we'll just do briefly. So that was chapter 3. Now, chapter 4, it focuses on the 10 offenses, but the first offense. And so much of the rest of the book will be Haridas as he looks at one of the 10 offenses and gives an amazing elucidation on the particular offense. Every morning we're chanting the 10 offenses after Tulsi before we chant our rounds. And sometimes we do it, you know, we do it every day so we can become a little insensitive or mechanical. We take initiation, we're giving lectures on the 10 offenses. The disciple was reflecting on this is connecting me, chanting the holy name is connecting me with the parampara, following these four rules and regulations. But there are certain things I must be careful to avoid, otherwise I will not get the full effect of the chanting. So from time to time we have to revisit these 10 offenses, but in a deeper mood to look closer, take inventory, as we look to see how we're becoming free and freer of such. Or as we're saying, if we're having complexities in our chanting, we're losing taste, we're not feeling more absorbed in the chanting, which is calling Krishna, which is connecting with the spiritual world. We have to look and see, what are we doing that's causing us not to want to reclaim our original heritage? What is it that we're doing that's causing us to be embarrassed in calling Krishna? What is it in our conscience, in our activities, that's causing us not to want to take shelter, that's creating a craziness and insanity? Then we look especially at the 10 offenses. Haridas is saying again, I am a puppet. The scriptures enumerate 10 offenses against the holy name. I am very fearful of these offenses. I will list them one by one. Please give me the strength to avoid these offenses. And so he speaks about the 10 offenses. Now, Haridas shares about the qualities of a sadhu, and he mentions some of these 26 qualities of a sadhu. But there's two kinds, qualities of two kinds, swarupa and tatashta. Now, of all the qualities that he mentions, he says, taking the Lord Krishna as the only shelter is the foremost. And this quality has a special name to it, which will come in a minute. It's called Swarupa Lakshana, which means, and he explains that it is like the primary. It's like the real identity. It is that which is the chief of qualities. Other qualities are ornaments. Like something, you know, is there and it's essence, and then you do a few other things to enhance it, you know, to refurbish it, to amplify it, you know, to illuminate it. So he says all the qualities of a sadhu are illuminations. But he said the essential quality is taking Lord Krishna as the only shelter. Now what he's telling us is that the most significant aspect of the identity of a genuine Vaishnava, although we have all of these qualities, mercy, tolerance, penance, going on, gentle, clean, regulated, so many, that these are all ornaments. And we know ornaments don't have much value if they're not put on something. And once they're put along with what they're associated with, then they have great value and they enhance the primary. So he's letting us know our primary identity, that in this age, Kali Yuga, it is so difficult to become serious, so difficult to make transition, so difficult that in other ages where we could engage in meditation and reach perfection, and where one could engage in temple worship and in yajnas, was so much more accessible. But in Kali Yuga, we can't even do the ninefold things nicely, because even one of those, you could get full love of God, but we do all of them, and still there are problems. And so he's given us a special way of how to be able to have hope in spite of the challenges that Kali brings to us. And that is the holy name. Yesterday we were reading how he was saying the jiva and the holy name. Everything else is all temporary. It's all part of the Mahatattva in different ways, permutations and combinations. Jiva, the tasha is covered over, but is also eternal from the spiritual kingdom, and the holy name. And so these two things are significant as the jiva becomes freer of the coverings. So these qualities can be divided into two categories, sarupa, or the direct and indigenous qualities of any substance, and the tathashta, qualities that are ornamental, which are visible when the substance come in contact with something else. So he says, the sadhu's acceptance of Lord Krishna as his only shelter is the sarupa lakshana. You know, a classical case is the case of Draupadi. So there she was with all these Maharathas, amazing husbands, and you know, so much opulence and so much facility, and there in the palace. But nothing could really give her full shelter, full protection. And she was being unrobed. And she just called out with full dedication to Krishna. And we see Haridasa's example. We see Sudama. We're going on one sadhu, one acharya. And we'll see this as a dominant characteristic, a dominant attribute, that whether things are going on in the most chaotic way, whether Krishna is supplying or not supplying or whatever is happening, they are just totally fixed in realizing my only shelter is Krishna. Meaning that they're appreciating that behind everything, you realize behind everything, whatever is going on, that Krishna factor is there. And regardless to what may be happening to the body, Krishna says, the may bhakya panasti, my devotee shall not perish. That he did not say, my devotee's body, my devotee's mind, my devotee's environment will not be challenging, my devotee will not struggle. No, all of those things are there. But the high quality devotee never loses awareness or cognizance that Krishna is the well-wisher, Krishna is the ultimate protector, Krishna is the ultimate provider. We do so many things in the mood that it depends on us. We should do everything in that mood that if we don't do it, it won't happen. Do everything in the mood that Krishna is giving us this wonderful chance to see how we can offer something back to Him. And while we do, with great care and with great attention and meticulously trying to do the right thing in the right way at the right time, at the end of the day, we have to have that detachment and full shelter of realizing that we're not the doers, we're not the controllers, and it's up to Krishna. Realizing that if Krishna ultimately wants to save us from whatever it is, there will be salvation. And when Krishna is allowing something to happen to us, then we can do many, many things expertly, and it will just fall apart. We all see that in our lives. There are times when each of us put so much effort in trying to do something, and it just does not happen. Or it just doesn't come out in the way that we expect it. And there are other times that there is sincerity, and there is dedication, and something that is very complex and very difficult and almost improbable that it becomes a established reality and it happens. We have these experiences, each of you. We have it constantly, and we have them in our lives. We just have to reflect a little more and see what Krishna is already doing so that he can do more. So this Swarupa Lakshana. Now the last discussions, he explains that saintliness depends upon Swarupa Lakshana. External designations such as the four social orders, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanapras, Sannyasi, says are not symptoms of a sadhu, real symptoms. The scriptures expound that the quality of a complete surrendered sadhu to Lord Krishna is the hallmark of a sadhu. He alone can chant Krishna's name purely for full dependency. We conclude here with his tuning closer to the offenses at the what's called sadhu ninda, offenses to the devotee of the Lord. And he's not just talking about only a high level devotee, but he's showing how offenses will check and will cancel one's spiritual life. And we'll wrap up with this section. When one has developed a real taste for chanting, then a single utterance of the holy name can eradicate all previous sins. If criticism is made against a sadhu for sins committed, and now this is very interesting. He's not saying that there is something very heinously wrong if you make an offense toward the Mahabhagavata, a pure devotee, or if you make offense toward someone who is not making mistakes or doesn't have any issues. He is letting us know that there is serious disturbance in one's devotional life, even when you are criticizing someone who has some past weakness, or someone who has come out of a negative situation, or someone who has had some accidental disturbance, accidental fall, and there is over unhealthy criticism. He says that this will weaken and can even destroy one's devotional kripa. It's quite interesting, because we have a duty to be spiritual scientists, and we are supposed to be monitoring and looking for what is proper, and we are to try to be servants, dasasmi dasu dasano das, by trying to facilitate others, work on ourselves first, and where there's something wrong, we are to lovingly address it. If we are in ignorance or in denial, then it's like we reinforce the problem, or we minimize the fact that we have a duty as servants of each other. We minimize sambandha relationship. But he's letting us know that that is to be done. But he's helping us to look really at consciousness. That in both cases, there is an evaluation or a looking at a deviation. But if we are approaching someone and looking at a deviation, mainly in the spirit of just trying to bring to the demise of that person, or mainly in the spirit of just trying to show that we are better, or in the mindset that we really don't care about the person, then it is very dangerous. Just like in general, in parenting or in community, we really should not chastise any child if we are not also a carrier or giving love to the child. Someone who's giving love to the child has the ability, or should have the ability, to help in making corrections, so that the child can realize that even the chastisement or the warning is also love from another expression. But someone who doesn't try to serve, assist, give care, give affection, give protection, facilitate, then they shouldn't really be involved in chastising the child. So one who is trying to call someone out, criticizing, looking at a fault, dealing with a deviation, if somehow, and this person is a devotee, if the person is not also involved in the process of trying to make things better or trying to assist that person, or does not really care about that individual, then even to speak bad about such person's deviation, or to attack them, or to deal with it, can be very dangerous to one's own devotional life. That just helps us to be reminded that every devotee is so rare and so important. The entities have come from many, many universes to be around and to participate somehow in Lord Chaitanya's movement, his wave. And that even someone may have a crazy personality, but there's something special about their soul, the evolution of their soul, that they have been able to say yes to Krishna in some extent. And they may even say yes temporarily and then later stop. But still, somehow, they have chanted the holy names, and they have had a chance to have the contact with the spiritual world through the transmission of the holy names. Now, if we look at this closer, we can understand some of the reasons why we often have more trouble in our own life and in our institution. Because often, there is so much minimization of what sadhu is or what devotees are. There's so much capitalization, exploitation sometimes ulterior motivation. Sometimes there's so much, even when there is something wrong, we just come to smash rather than to facilitate, to help. Or we go looking for the fault finding rather than the love finding. We either back away and let what happens, figure it's not our issue, or we jump in, sometimes in the mood of just dealing with the problem, but not being sufficiently concerned about the person who is undergoing the problem. Or we jump in and dealing with the fire or the crisis without looking at the seeds or the roots that have brought that or can bring other types of crisis. So in the process, aparads are made. As we make aparads to peers or to others, then what happens is that it has its way of weakening the devotional creeper. And so in a situation where Mahaprabhu is calling souls into the world, and they've come from all different backgrounds. Some people in past lives have been like Apsaras, Gandharas, Vijaharas. Some have been yogis, this place, that place, Shuridharas, Shastris, so many different things. And so now they come and they're to engage in this Surinagrity, full surrender, where the Lakshana is just accepting Krishna as their ultimate shelter. And so in this lifetime, some city power is taken away, some opulences, many complications one may have to experience, which may make them even minimize what they are and how and what they are connected with. So here we find such persons being called out in a special category. And this is why when we read, meaning that that's an aspect of that person. Or it can be like a failure, but not that the person is necessarily a failure. You can make a failure. But to the degree that we see ourselves as failure, that can be dangerous. So sometimes we make some mistakes in our lives. Okay, so we fail. We did wrong. Now let's pick up and learn from it and do something better. But once the person accepts, I am a failure, then their whole life becomes very, very disturbed because now they've accepted mediocrity. They've accepted deviation. They've accepted this is where I'm at, so I'm in Maya. I'm a Maya's agent, and therefore, if I do Maya, what's the big thing? This is where I'm at. But if I accept, I wasn't properly attentive, I was taking things for granted, I wasn't removing the obfuscation, the clouds sufficiently, the sun wasn't coming through, the radiation of the holy name, I began to minimize, looking closer to weed out the offenses and the aparads, and much of my life has become so much watering the aparad, as much or more than the creeper, so we stop that. We get now better association, take the scriptures more seriously, etc. So he ends with this kind of focus about how dangerous it is in making offenses. And we have many, many stories throughout the Shastra of what happens when offenses are made. There's a wonderful story, just one in passing, of Sobhari Muni, how he was powerful yogi, had amazing siddhic power, and was doing his vrats in the water, but because of an offense toward Garuda. And it wasn't, in one sense, like a real serious, heavy, obvious offense that was made. But because Garuda does what he does, and the yogi interfered, then there was some inauspiciousness that he had to deal with. And that auspiciousness weakened his spiritual immune system to the point where normally he would have no disturbance, anything in the water, that was his element. But now two fish engage in copulation and his mind becomes so disturbed that he loses his equilibrium, he becomes eager for sense gratification, and desires that he had seemingly had been rid of just came back to haunt him to the point that he had to act upon him. So sometimes we see that someone seemingly in good status, doing quite well, and then some serious deviation takes place. It is normally associated with serious offense. Some level of Vaishnav or aggregate Vaishnav aparad. And when that happens, then even where there was knowledge and there was strength, then one falls prey to things that they even clearly understood and preached about and help others to be freed of, then they fall prey to such. Which means that some of the mercy has been withdrawn due to the offenses. See, the sadhu nida. So, two types of bad association he talks about that can cause us to make these type of offenses. And he gives the example of being overly attached to the opposite sex. And he gives the example of somebody who's a blasphemer and being in association with such. And earlier he was talking about a mayavadi type of person. These things just associating, a satsanga, or bad association. That this keeping company with licentious persons, a satsanga, or bad association, will cause one to do what? To start thinking like such persons, speaking like such persons, acting like such persons. Then the mercy gets withdrawn. The Kanishtha Adhikar, our last section talks about Kanishtha, Madhyam, and Uttama, and gives an evaluation of these persons. Let me read his closing remarks. If anyone offends a sadhu in a moment of delusion and madness, he must fall at the sadhu's feet and repent. Weeping and full of contrition, he must beg forgiveness. He should declare himself a fallen wretch in need of a Vaishnava's grace. A sadhu is very merciful. His heart will soften, and he will embrace the offender, thus exonerating him from his offenses. Offers the explanation of the first 10 Namaparads at your lotus feet. One who is like a bumblebee, attracted to the lotus feet of Sri Haridasa Thakur, will find the power of life in self in this Harinam Chintamani. So, in this chapter 3, we looked at so many things about Namabhas, the clouds that cover over the effulgence of the holy name. And then in this chapter 4, was mainly a focus on, you know, the sadhu nida, the offenses to Vaishnavas, how this will interfere or obfuscate from receiving the sufficient benefit and potency from chanting the holy name. We want to take inventory regularly, especially during this Kartik period, and see how we can fortify ourselves by becoming much more fixed in watering the creeper in a healthy way. Look at those anarthas and weeds that can cause some stagnation and also devastation. And we want to particularly see how to enjoy Krishna consciousness more and make it easier. It is much more complex and difficult when we allow these kind of unhealthy things to come into our consciousness. And we are particularly seeing that because Lord Chaitanya is so merciful, he is Radha and Krishna. Krishna is coming in the Bhava Radha Rani, coming particularly to give the love at a difficult time within the universe, and agreeing the highest love, the highest aspect, you know, down to the lowest level practically, and to do it by himself being actively involved in organizing the Sankirtan revolution. So such mercy extending itself from the spiritual world means that souls that somehow or other have tried to say yes to participating, that they're carrying some empowerment, they're carrying some special benediction. And as we help to allow that to grow in ourselves and within others, then there'll be tremendous comfort and solace as we go on in trying to serve Srila Prabhupada. And to the degree not, then just like we see in the Shastra, there can be fratricidal war, where Maya is not so able to attack us externally so much for real devastation, but the greater attacks, of course, internal. And time again, we see that our greatest adversarial things are happening to us from an internal perspective, and has a lot to do with Vaishnava Aparad. The converse of that is how much we can strengthen our society and check some of the Maya that can happen to us as well as to our communities by healthily honoring the sadhus. And the best way, of course, is we understand better what is a sadhu. Maybe try to become a proper sadhu ourselves. And this way we can give better service, because our own life will act upon the environment and will make a change. Hare Krishna. Any questions? Yes. Yagana.
If we're afraid that by speaking to other devotees about some fall down that they had, that we would do it in a way that would damage them rather than help them, so we just don't speak to them at all, not in a way that would help them and not in a way that would damage them, is that also an offense?
Again, it's a matter of consciousness. It's not always what was said, even sometimes what was done, you know, as you speak to someone or as you interact with a person. But it has much more to do with what is the mindset. as you approach a person. The idea, the culture of love, you constantly want to see how you can be there for your beloved. And so we're calling each other Prabhu. So in some cases, like a parent, some cases the best way to help the child is that you reinforce what they're doing so they know that this is proper. In some cases you have to catch them doing something right so you can also assist to reinforce it. In some cases you have to watch them a little closer and you show them what is improper. You call them out based on, you know, what is improper. But in each case it should be done for the well-being of that child or the well-being of the person. If we are coming in an arrogant way just because we feel we're better, no, that is not good. We want to, make the person feel small. We want to attack them. No. The idea should be, how can I assist? And then we reflect and try our best. And even if we make some mistake, it's not such a serious thing. If the conscience is in the right place. When the consciousness is not in the right place, then definitely held accountable. Fully held accountable. Any other comment or question? Yes. What do you say?
Saying about the symptoms of Vaishnava aparad and how they can accumulate and everything. How do we know who we've offended if there's not one specific case that, you know, oh yes, I had an argument with this devotee, or, you know, I've been thinking bad thoughts about this devotee, but yet, you know, like you're saying, the symptoms are there of somehow having committed a Vaishnava aparad. So how do you know which Vaishnava you've committed offense to, and how do you rectify that?
For instance, when we hear that if we're chanting the holy name and tears not coming from our eyes and we're not feeling great love and we're not feeling prema, it means some offenses are there. And we make all kind of accidental offenses. It's like when you break a law, you know, there's mitigating circumstances, and it's processed and it's evaluated. Our general mind should be, I'm an offender. I'm an offender. I'm in a material body. I've turned my back on Krishna's eternal leelas. I'm an offender that so often I'm thinking about sense gratification, and if circumstances allow, I may even take advantage of it. I'm an offender that I'm often thinking, aha, mamiti, I'm this body, I'm this mind, I'm this intelligence, I'm this senses. I'm often thinking of myself over that, the needs of others. I'm an offender because I come before the deity, and most times I don't even feel, you know, that this is the deity. I'm just thinking, well, okay, another artik, another darshan, etc. I'm an offender because I'm ordering tulsi, and I'm not really thinking that this is really a connection with one of Krishna's eternal leaders. This is a pure devotee of such. So first we accept that our basic condition is that offenses are there. So that there's a certain mood of humility and a desire to rise higher. Now, second, we try to relate to all devotees in the spirit that here's a chance for me to serve my guru. As we've asked you in the community, that you serve each devotee as if the success or failure of your own life is dependent upon how you serve, you know, that Vaishnava. If we take each devotee very serious, then whether it's our senior, it's our junior, it's our peer, whether we are trying to offer some assistance by giving some advice or helping to make some, you know, some correction, that in each case is done out of genuine concern and love, then we don't find ourselves getting so bogged down by offenses, because we're constantly trying to see Krishna or see Guru coming out. And we are attentive and careful how we relate. Even after all that is said and done, still there should be a constant mood of feeling and praying to be forgiven for offenses. And where there's question, there's doubt, you approach this person, you say, Prabhu, please, perhaps I made an offense in the way I addressed you, what I was thinking about, you know, and you ask for forgiveness. Even if offense wasn't made, allows you to be more careful, and it also helps you in the relationship with that person, hopefully, that there is more focus on, we want to relate in the spirit of being genuine sadhus and Vaishnavas. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Talking about looking at a sadhu, the power of discrimination is needed. We have to think whether in our mind what is wrong, what is right. Many times it happens that you come across a saint, so-called saint, I would say, who you don't know. For the first time you are looking at him. The mind is, again, goes through its own process of discrimination and it starts thinking whether he is a real, genuine saint or not. In the process, sometimes you make a mistake. To even a genuine saint, you start thinking that he is not. Is that offense?
Yes, but it's still a matter of intent. You know, yesterday I was saying something quite different 2 days ago, but it's similar. It's not like a contradiction. And I was saying that people often say, especially in New Age philosophy, don't be judgmental. And I was saying, we take the total opposite of that. We say, always be judgmental. But the question is, how are you dealing with the evaluation? Loving means monitoring, concern, protection. It means looking to see what is best, trying to do the best. It means looking at yourself, looking at others. So we do go love finding. And we do go finding to see to what degree is it representing Shastra? To what degree is it in accord with what our guru said and done? To what degree is it in accord to previous acharyas, previous saints? So yes, we are to hear someone. We are to watch their behavior. But we are hearing and watching because we are to be hungry about trying to see how to advance more. We are to be hungry about trying to know more about our eternal home. We are to be eager in trying to get, you know, the blessings. See, what I did mention in this section, it was saying how love of God is contained within the heart of the great devotees, the pure devotees of Krishna. And this bhakti is made available as we hear and associate with such souls. So he's saying how Krishna has allowed the transmission to take place from the heart of the unalloyed devotee of his to the aspirant. Then he gets even more specific. And he says, three things really help that transmission. And then he goes right specific. He says, the prasadam, you know, the remnants from the pure devotee, the dust from the lotus feet, and the bath water from their feet. So he's helping us to see that sadhu is very important, and especially the high-level sadhu. This is one of the ways how we can get our flame, ignite it, and grab above, you know, the namabhas, you see, platform, etc. So if all of these things are such, sadhu, shastra and guru, then we particularly embrace shastra, which means we have to bring our mind intelligence, because it's shastra that helps us to know what is proper sadhu, what is proper guru. And that means studying and absorbing ourselves and evaluating, accessing to see. Because we're not yatta madha tata, but we're not accepting. And our acharyas were very much against that. They were not just wanting to have an environment where people are in denial. They do not look at how sinful material energy is. They do not see the beauty, the specific variegatedness and heterogeneity of Krishna and his leelas. Or as we were discussing, that as we look at something genuinely, then we look at the tattva. We look at now, what is the nama? What is it called? How is it addressed? What is it understood to be? Look at the rupa. We see how it is formed. What is form? You know, we look at the qualities, the guna, the nature, how that's manifest. And then we look at the leela. All of that's together. And what is the relationships, what is the interactions of such. So now to do all of that, it means a certain amount of scrutinization. You see.
But Maharaj, the roop and naam is fine. But when it comes to the quality as guna, what happens is a person may be highly spiritual, has got a lot of bhakti, but when you go to his personal qualities, he has got greed, he has got anger, he has got other qualities which are present in some form, whether low or high form, in every person. Well, do you discard him because of that? Do you take him only for the spirituality? Or do you overall, you know, evaluate him? And where are the norms? What norms do you really fix it? How do you get to it?
Well, it may be what Prabhupada explains in the Bhagavad Gita, that he is not a high devotee. We see that as greed, lust, anger, all these things based on himself, based on his body, based on his own plan, based on what seems like sense gratification, but he's chanting a holy name and he has some other good qualities, we realize, yes, he's a devotee. And he's to be respected. But such devotee, who's not a high devotee, it's not our duty to follow their example, or do we have to have a duty that we have to even associate, you know, with such a person? It's not a high devotee. But now if we think that when someone is angry, we automatically take that as being not a spiritual quality, but a devotee is supposed to address deviation, be concerned. That is also an aspect of love, is that you have emotions, and the emotions that you show your affection in different ways, you know, based on your connection with the beloved. But if we can see from what constitutes sadhu, and from the examples of sadhus and acharyas, that somebody's lifestyle is not in line, then we're not to be in denial and think, well, it's okay. We should realize this is not first class. And if we're associating, we should be careful that we don't pick up such qualities. And if we can, we should try to make sure we don't have the negative qualities that are there, and try to let our own association help to draw on that, help that person to see why they should work on their weaknesses. This means having more faith in Krishna. Just like I said, the number one quality of the Vaishnava, mature Vaishnava, was fully dependent on Krishna. So one is not just dependent on things being in order, or things being in place, that we do really serious service when everything is easy. When it's not, you know, we check out. Or when everyone is flattering us and ingratiating us, then we are very eager to, you know, do a project or to associate. And then when not, you know, then we go away. You know, that means we're playing into the duality. So much of our existence is that we are like the living entities in the spiritual world, and it means that they're not products of the duality. So constantly in our lives, we're being confronted with whether we're going to embrace and honor the duality, or whether we're going to look and keep more focused on transcendence. So this is always to be expected. The material world is always a place of problems. Institutions are always places where there is different issues. Any institution, a spiritual institution, a commercial institution, a political institution, educational institution, they all have different things. They work out different lifespans, different cycles they go through, you know, different type of things. It's like an entity of its own. So that's always there. But the question is, how does one keep focusing on the essence? And we don't really have a chance to keep focusing on the essence unless there are things that can distract us from the essence. And we keep diving for it. Kali Maya is purposely arranging some distraction. That's her duty to see. What do you really want? Oh, you want wealth? Here it is. You want fame? Oh, here. You want sense gratification this way, that way? Here. You want a reason to justify your breaking four principles? Want a reason to justify three principles? Okay. We'll give you a certain kind of association, certain kind of issues that will frustrate you, that will let that happen. That's all to be expected. Any other question? Yes.
Queen Kunti prayed for calamities to come again and again, and I was speaking with some older god sisters on Prabhupada's disappearance day, and we were saying that a lot of us have been through so many calamities, so to pray that prayer, we become a little bit apprehensive about that, you know, it doesn't feel so good sometimes. So how do we still keep that pioneering spirit and wanting to become strong and endure these things, but yet still, it's kind of like jumping into the cold pool. We're a little bit apprehensive about it.
Because Queen Kunti or the high-level devotee is not a masochist or a sadist. They're not just wanting misery, pain, suffering. But she's praying, if such calamities, if such things can help increase my meditation, devotion on you, all right, let it happen. So this is the mood. Whatever can help us in becoming more fixed. Krishna takes everything away from us. He makes us extremely infamous. He makes us totally, ill, the most chronic type of disease. That if this can really help us in becoming more fixed as devotees and can help to bring us back home, our mood should be we eagerly want it and we celebrate it. Yes. Mm-hmm. In the front.
Raj, you were speaking about how consciousness takes prominence even over your words and your actions. So I'm wondering how much does offensive consciousness play a part in these difficulties in devotional service, even if externally in our words and our actions we're cordial, we're friendly, but we're still maintaining offensive mentality towards devotees?
Well, that's one of the powerful aspects of Lord Chaitanya's mission and blessings to us in Kali Yuga. We know that in earlier ages, thinking offensively, speaking, acting, pretty much almost the same. It's held against us. But in this age, the thinking is not the same. However, when we're thinking improper, an alarm should go off, because if we keep thinking improper, it's going to later turn into improper speech and also to improper actions. See, it's the service attitude, it's the consciousness that's ultimately is what allows the creeper to break through the molds of material nature. I mean, interesting how we have the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So all of these things that we do, whatever it is, that they are things to ultimately help to bring about more of an internal result, internal effect. We don't just focus on, okay, we don't work, we don't preach, we don't do this. We just simply think of Krishna or chant. If we have that level of purity, that's one thing. We still could affect the environment based on that. But the point is that by engaging our senses, this is sadhana bhakti, then it has its effect on consciousness. And as we have certain consciousness, as we do things, we do them with more quality and purity. Krishna is Atmaram, so he doesn't need anything. But what are we doing then? That means everything we're doing is trying to do, as Hari Das was saying, move away the clouds. It's different kind of clouds, different types of things that have come in, different kind of acculturation that's causing us now not to be able to access, you know, our original swarup and identity. And so now we are just cleansing and refining and refurbishing. If it's something we really have to do that's beyond our ability, or it's something totally new, then Krishna consciousness could be even more awesome. And we could really think, you know, what is this? But really, it's really getting rid of the craziness. Because it's the stuff that's superfluous, unnecessary, the anarthas, the weeds, that we're trying to now get rid of that so we can once again be who we really are. So in conclusion, and we stop now, it's getting a little late. So Haridas Thakur then has come in from the spiritual world. Lord Chaitanya is using him. And he is just experiencing all these symptoms of ecstasy and prema as he is being used to share these points that we're listening to, for, you know, for the next week in the Harinam Chintamani. And he's letting us know from step to step about proper sambandha, proper embracing the holy name, the effects, the potency therein, and what things can minimize the effects of such. He's warning us in a very powerful way. So in this way, as we have made our vows as devotees, take initiation, and we align so much on the essence of the holy name, we gain a little more clarity of how this works and what things can cause it not to work individually and also collectively. So I'll read the next two chapters for tomorrow. And then tonight, those who can, we have the program at Penn State College at 6:45. Usually get back a little late. I think it's around 10 or 10:30. But devotees who are available, not doing services, and can go, then we should leave in order to go there this evening. Okay. ISKCON Founder Chad, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Dharavadji, C.C. Varadhamma Dara Radha Kala Chandiki. Hare Krishna.